Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
La-di-da, la-di-da.
He's looking at you, kid.
Let's put a smile on that face.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
It's midday at the movies. I'm Tom Hall. The Golden Globes are Sunday night. What surprises might be in store, and how will the shadow of the ever-expanding sexual misconduct scandal affect this awards season? Is Hollywood in the mood to pat itself on the back? Jed Dietz, the founder and director of the Maryland Film Festival, and Max Weiss, the managing editor and film critic at Baltimore Magazine, join me with Take It to the Bank predictions and a look at what's in theaters this weekend. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick reviews First Date at the Spotlighters Theater. First, the news. Good afternoon on this snowy, wintry day here in Balmer, Maryland. From WYPR 88.1, I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. As I report every time we have weather like this, it is snowing and we are going to die. It's not so bad here, but there are places in Maryland, particularly on the eastern shore, the lower eastern shore, that are having considerably higher snowfall amounts than we have here in Charm City. Baltimore, Washington, it has stopped snowing here, at least in Charles Village. It's expected to stop snowing completely in about an hour or so. We should top out about 1 to 3 inches in our area. But as I said, lots more in other places around the state. There is a winter weather advisory that's in effect for another hour. And there is, more importantly, a wind chill advisory that starts at 10 o'clock tonight and runs through noon tomorrow. This is serious stuff. Wind chills will range from 0 to 10 degrees below zero tonight through Friday morning. It's currently 25 degrees in the Inner Harbor in Baltimore. But again, with the wind, it feels a whole lot colder. And cold wind and chills like this can cause frostbite in as little as 30 minutes. So keep your skin unexposed. Wear gloves. Wear a hat. If you see somebody without gloves and without a hat, give her some gloves. Give her a hat. It's going to be chilly and it could be dangerous. Within 30 minutes, you could get frostbite if you are exposed to temperatures the kind of which we are expecting later tonight. So besides the snow, the talk in Washington today is, of course, about books, mostly the book by Michael Wolff, who's written a scathing critique of the Trump administration called The Fire and the Fury. We are not going to talk about books today. We're going to talk about books tomorrow on the Midday News Wrap. Today, we're going to talk about movies. Jed Dietz and Max Weiss are here. How you guys doing?
Hey, how's it going?
Great.
Good to see you, and thank you for trudging through the tundra. Max Weiss, of course, the managing editor and film critic for Baltimore Magazine. She writes about culture at Vulture.com, which is the entertainment website of New York Magazine, the same magazine that published an excerpt from Mr. Wolff's book, which I read last night. It's quite something to read. And again, as I said, we will talk about that tomorrow. And Jed Dietz, of course, the founder and director of the Maryland Film Festival. So award season is underway. We're going to talk about the Golden Globes. They happen on Sunday night, the 75th annual Golden Globe, so we'll have to wear our special anniversary costumes for that. A few interesting omissions from the roster of nominees. We'll talk about a couple of new biopics. One is about Winston Churchill. It's called The Darkest Hour. Or is it called just Darkest
just
Hour?
Just Darkest Hour.
Darkest Hour. Okay, that's more artsy.
It's so annoying when they don't put the article in front.
That's right.
So pretentious.
Darkest Hour. Well, pretentious or not, I saw it. I thought it was terrific, and we'll see if you guys agree. And we're going to talk about another one, another biopic, which opens tomorrow night here in Baltimore. It's about another legendary statesman, Tonya Harding. I mean, of the greats. I mean, starting at Julius Caesar through Churchill, Roosevelt, Tonya Harding. I think they're all on the same list. So, by the way, listeners, give us a call, 410-662-8780, and let us know what your favorite biopic is. So we're going to talk about these, you know, historical biography, narrative fiction, narrative nonfiction, I guess you would call them, movies about historical characters. So 410-662-8780, special day here on Midday, special phone answerer Maureen Harvey making a cameo appearance on the Midday Circus, and we are delighted that she's doing that. We appreciate that. Our email, if you want to drop us an email, midday@wipr.org, and to find us in the Twittersphere, @MiddayTomHall. So,
I like that you pronounced biopic correctly instead of biopic, which is how some people like it rhymes with biopic. So yes, it's biographical picture.
Yes, you it's put a them biographical together, picture.
Biopic. Well done, you.
I figured that out. Okay.
You passed the first
test.
So
that's a 1 point for me. So what do you think? First of all, the shadow of the sex sexual misconduct scandal in Washington has got to hang very heavily on the Golden Globes, the Oscars, and any other award ceremony that they come. There's a movement to have all of the actors and actresses, I guess the actors already wear black.
I know, it's so funny. Yeah. There's a movement to have the women wear black, and then the men are gallantly also all wearing black, as opposed to
such
the
solidarity.
Usual hot pink that they're wearing.
I mean, so if someone shows up on the red carpet Sunday night in a beautiful, you know, Dior red gown, Max.
That's a statement.
What's that going to mean?
That's a political statement that you're making, that you're not in solidarity with the Me Too, with this new Time's Up initiative. No one's going to do that. No one's going to have the guts.
You predict.
This is my prediction. Yeah, it's going to look downright funereal at the Golden Globes, which is really kind of silly in a way. For a ceremony that is a celebration of movies by the Hollywood Foreign Press, which is a body that only Jed Dietz understands what they actually are.
Now, actually, explain what the Hollywood Foreign Press is, Jed. That's a good question, because I was always under the impression that it's this gigantic organization. It's actually not.
No, it's a very small organization. It's been in the 50s. I think it's up over the 70s now, of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. The Golden Globes themselves have a sort of odd history in the award season, because they used to be really just a gathering of the tribe, and there was a great dinner and lots of drinking, and everybody had a great time, unlike the highly prestigious and really, you know, for business, a very important night at the Oscars. Golden Globes is sort of a relaxing, different kind of night. And there were gifts given. If you were nominated, you were expected to give a nice gift to all the 57 members of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association.
Graft and corruption he's talking about.
No, it was politeness. It was just...
Yes, that's what I meant.
And just 2 weeks after Christmas and Hanukkah. I mean, boy, that could set you back a little bit.
Well,
if you're making $14 million a movie, you could probably afford it.
But it's turned into, because of television and this show and its position in the award season... and a little bit because they're a different format. They have, you know, the musical comedy category as well as the dramatic category, and they do television and movies. Mm-hmm. It's become an entertaining evening, and that has already, you know, that by definition has boosted it to some importance.
Seth Meyers is hosting. It's 8 o'clock on NBC Sunday night. So, Max, the when you look at the list of nominees,
right?
Are you surprised by, let's talk about omissions, are you surprised by things that you expected to see that you're not seeing?
Well, okay, one of the big omissions under Best Motion Picture, Musical, or Comedy is The Big Sick, which was sort of like one of the most lovable films of the year, a film that just everybody who sees it delights in it. So that seems like the kind of film that the Golden Globes in particular always embraces. So a little surprised that they weren't nominated.
So the ones that were Best Motion Picture, Comedy or Musical, Disaster Artist, Get Out, Greatest Showman, I, Tonya, that's the Tonya Harding movie that opens tomorrow here, and then Lady Bird.
All
of which, you know, have been received quite well. But, yeah that is
Well, The Greatest Showman has gotten mixed reviews.
Very mixed.
It's a cheesy musical. If you like cheesy musicals, you're going to love it. If you're sort of averse to people just bursting out into song and staring into the horizon, you're going to hate it. I actually kind of loved it. You know?
So cheesy musical. I mean, isn't that a little redundant?
No.
I mean, really.
But look at La La Land.
Oklahoma in the wind comes a-rushing down the pipe. Is that, that's slightly cheesy.
It's
a classic, but it's slightly cheesy, isn't it? I mean, aren't musicals sort of inherently cheesy?
And some people really don't like them because of that. Mm-hmm. But then you get things like La La Land, which came out, obviously, last year and won, but then didn't win Best Picture.
All right.
Yeah,
it was just
correctly.
Last year, and it ended up being Moonlight, but they made a mistake at the announcement.
Oh,
that's
God,
the Oscars.
That was the most cringe-inducing moment ever. But that wasn't cheesy at all. And there have been ones, I don't think Chicago was particularly cheesy. You know, it depends on the umbrellas of Schomburg. I mean, it depends on the musical itself. But yes, generally speaking, they are cheesy, and there are people who, it's like cilantro, you know? There's
either love
it
or you're allergic
it.
To it.
Yeah.
So, Jed, I mean, the Golden Globes Globes in terms of the hat tipping that it may do towards the Oscars. I mean, is it good for the Vegas bookmakers and everybody else to say, okay, if it's done well in the Globes, it's gonna do well in the Oscars? What's the relationship between the voting blocks in these two groups?
So the best predictors have been the Guild associations, Directors Guild, Producers Guild, and Screen Actors. Screen Actors specifically because they're the biggest voting bloc in the Academy. So those historically tend to be better predictors than the Golden Globes. And also because of this format change. You know, you can win Best Picture. Get Out could win Best Picture in Musical and Comedy at the Golden Globes. It's hard to know how that will predict going into the Oscars. But this whole award season, I mean, almost everything that happens is minutely, thought about and analyzed, predicting into Oscar stuff. And all these awards, even if you don't get Oscars, these things really matter. You can now use them to help market movies and start careers and stuff. So,
yeah, I mean, it matters if you're nominated and you're up for a contract for another movie, you know.
Can I mention my favorite and my least favorite thing about the nominations? My favorite is that Christopher Plummer got nominated for All the Money in the World, because for those who don't know, he was the 11th hour replacement for Kevin Spacey after all the allegations about Kevin Spacey's alleged sexual abuse came forward. The film had been filmed. It was ready to be released in 6 weeks. Christopher Plummer came in. He reshot all of Kevin Spacey's scenes. They mostly edited him. They did some reshoots, from what I understand. And the guy gets a Golden Globe
nomination.
And he's
in the trailer that they're advertising the movie on television.
I got to tell you, he's great. And it just sort of reminds me of, like, he's that certain kind of British actor who just shows up and gets the job done and sort of rolls his eyes. There's a famous anecdote about Laurence Olivier on the set of Marathon Man with Dustin Hoffman, who also, by the way, well, we won't talk about him. But anyway, Hoffman, you know, apparently was starving himself and hadn't showered in five weeks. And Olivier said to him, "My good man, why don't you just try acting?"
Yeah. Well, it is really something, because you do hear about these people, you know, they're playing a cop, and so they spend 2 years, you know, doing ride-alongs with people in L.A., and they, you know, they read stuff, they learn martial arts, they do blah, 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 blah. And here's Christopher Plummer. They call him up, "You want to do a movie? Are you free Tuesday?" "Yeah, sure. You know, let me reschedule a lunch."
Golden Globe nomination.
"And now I'm nominated for a Golden Globe."
And he's brilliant. And so my least favorite, though, is that Tiffany Haddish didn't get a nomination for Girls Trip. I suspect she is going to get a Best Supporting Actress Oscar nomination. I think the Golden Globes missed the boat on this. It is the funniest performance since Melissa McCarthy was in Bridesmaids.
Ooh.
It's brilliant.
Yeah, people have spoken really highly of her. She has a book out, too, that I heard her interviewed about on NPR, and that sounds fascinating.
She's a superstar.
She's a very smart person.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm interested in her. I mean, how about you, Jed? I mean, when you perused the list, were there things that stuck out to you because they were not included?
Well, I would certainly go along with what Max said on The Big Sick. I thought you could have bet really good money on The Big Sick being included. Greta Gerwig for Best Director, she wrote and directed for Lady Bird.
She's not on there.
She's not on. And I that to me is another stunner. I mean, I don't see how you can acknowledge the film that's been universally acknowledged that came out this fall and not acknowledge her wonderful work as a director.
I didn't love Lady Bird. I liked it. It was so overpraised that I went in you know when that happens?
Yeah,
when there's like
true.
So much advanced praise for something, and then you go in and you're like, this is a really good coming of age film. It's rather explicitly autobiographical. Saoirse Ronan is amazing in it. But it's considered right now the front runner to win the Best Picture, which I think is insane.
Well, I think Laurie Metcalf too, and I think
she's amazing.
Yeah, because it's such a female-centered movie.
Yeah,
given
true.
This time in Hollywood, I think it's going to get traction. But I do think it deserves it. I think you're right, though, about the hype. It came out of the fall festivals, Toronto and stuff, with such incredible passion behind it. And you have to remember, this is Greta. She's written other movies before.
Right.
We've had several at the festival. She's been at the festival a bunch of times as an actress, but this is her first directorial thing, and it's beautifully directed.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, she's talented.
We got to take a break, but we will come back. And listeners, if you would like to do have, first of all, a rare occasion to speak to the one and only Maureen Harvey. You call 410-662-8780. You could email us at midday@wipr.org. You can send us a tweet at midday Tom Hall. We want to know about you and your best pick for biopics, because we're going to talk about this Gary Oldman movie where he plays Winston Churchill. Yeah. Two movies about the Battle of Dunkirk, which is interesting. One's called Dunkirk and the other is Darkest Hour.
Yep.
They take that same historical event from two very different perspectives, and then the Tonya Harding movie. I can't wait to hear what you think about this, Max. This is going to be fun. So again, 410-662-8780, midday at the movies. We will be right back. Stay with us.
This is Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR, where you're listening to Midday.
And welcome back. It's Midday at the Movies. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on Midday, it's the Midday News Wrap. We're going to take a look at the week's headlines, and gosh knows there are many, many of those to look at. Julie Bykowitz of the Wall Street Journal will be here, as well as Mike Fletcher. He's a senior writer with ESPN's The Undefeated. Plus, we'll have an in-studio performance by a classical guitar duo, and these folks will knock your socks off. They are a husband and wife. They're called Duo Amaral, and they'll join us and play live right here in Studio A. So that's all coming up tomorrow on Midday. If you've just joined us today, it is, as I said, Midday at the Movies. Jed Dietz is with us. As always, he's the founder and director of the Maryland Film Festival. Max Weiss is here as well, filling in for our good buddy Ann Hornaday. Max is the managing editor and film critic for Baltimore Magazine, and she writes about culture at Vulture.com, the entertainment website of New York Magazine. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. So we have all seen Dunkirk, I think, right?
Yes.
I saw it on IMAX.
I saw it on IMAX, too. I saw it on IMAX, too. That was great. And so we want to talk about The Darkest Hour. This is Gary Oldman, who I think, I mean, I didn't read this specifically, but my recollection of the movie is that, like, he's in every scene. I mean, he's just in this movie all the time. And I thought it was a terrific performance playing Winston Churchill during the Battle of Dunkirk, figuring out how to make Dunkirk happen. So, Max, what'd you think?
I think Oldman is amazing in it. He completely dissolves into the character, and it's a funny, fiercely intelligent, interesting performance. I thought the film was okay. I thought it was a little corny. I thought it was sort of this myth building of this obviously mythical figure in the history of England, and I kind of felt like, you know, if you're a British person, you're going to see that film and just be swelling with pride about Winston Churchill and the pluck of the British people. And I am not a British person, so I could sort of, you know, look at it from a distance and say, you know, great performance, but the movie was a little corny for my taste.
Yeah, there is stuff, Jed, that they made up. I mean, there are some scenes in there that didn't actually happen historically, but I found it pretty persuasive.
I agree with you, I'm not a British person either, but I found it very inspiring because I think it shows this very imperfect man really trying to figure out what to do at this moment of unbelievable crisis where the British army is about to be wiped out one way or the other. And can he save the lives? He doesn't even know that. But even with saving all the lives, all the material, the army stuff is all left in France and destroyed. So you have to rebuild. And then what's that mean for Britain? You know, they're in the path of this, the German wave. And to see him grappling with that with very credible arguments for just accept peace, you know.
Because the history of it is fascinating.
Yeah.
And incredible. And the statecraft of Churchill, because it shows him dealing not only with this very real problem in Calais, France, but also with political problems at home, because he's got people nipping at his heels in Parliament.
Yeah, so more than nipping. I mean, the knives are out, right? But I think you're right. I think comparing it or coupling it with Dunkirk is so fascinating, because Dunkirk is visually sweeping and, I mean, really extraordinary filmmaking. I mean, Lawrence of Arabia, Zhivago kind of filmmaking. And this is completely different than that. This is in these tiny little rooms, bunker in London. You know, he breaks out in this totally fictitious scene of going to the subway, although Churchill did break out occasionally and go out and mingle with people and sort of test ideas with just ordinary people on the streets in London. And yet the drama in it is extraordinary.
Yeah, and the challenge of playing an historical character. I mean, I was brought to mind of Meryl Streep, you know, who plays people we know, Julia Child, Margaret Thatcher.
Right.
And Oldham is no stranger to playing historical characters, some of whom we are familiar with through media. Right?
Yeah. I mean, and the one thing that was interesting about it is usually when you watch movies like this, the hero is the one advocating for peace and pacifism. This is a rare case where our hero is like, nope, we gotta do the war thing, you know? And that is, in fact, the right choice.
And literally, if it means we all die, we have to do this.
That we make that choice because we are British people and we are not going to succumb to Nazi rule. Yay, British people!
You know? Right. I mean, but it's just fun to see an actor take on somebody who's not made up.
No,
somebody who's real.
Yes. And so when you see him at the various award ceremonies, I mean, he looks nothing like this.
Well,
the makeup is also an extraordinary
achievement. Yeah, because he wore a prosthetic.
Well, and you have to remember, this is the actor that played Beethoven and Sid Vicious in other movies. You know, and Harry
Potter.
Two
very similar musicians.
Yeah, right, exactly. And, yeah, it's extraordinary what he's pulled off.
Yeah. So Cheryl writes in on email, just saw Darkest Hour. It was outstanding. Gary Oldman should receive Best Actor Award. But my all-time favorite biopic movie is All That Jazz, which focuses on Bob Fosse. And it came out in the early 80s. All That Jazz. That's a good one.
A very not corny musical.
Yeah,
there
you
go. That is an excellent
choice. That's right. I stand corrected. All right, Marty, calling from CCBC. Welcome to Midday with Max Weiss and Jed Dietz.
Oh, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. What's on your mind? What's your favorite biopic? You got one?
My favorite is What's Love Got to Do with It?
Oh.
It has Angela Bassett in it.
Yeah. Angela Bassett plays Tina Turner. That's a great suggestion.
Right.
Thank you, Marty. That's terrific. So what was your what was the thing you, can you identify the one thing about that movie that really resonated with you?
I think the acting was incredible, and also the how Tina Turner was able to get out of her predicament of her marriage to Ike, and you know, the singing was really good too. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, great, good suggestion. Yeah. All right, biopics. We're talking about biotip picks today. If you have a favorite, give us a call. Thanks for that call, Marty. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. So, Tonya Harding, who I, you know, remember from, you know, seeing that thing play out live. I forget what year the Olympics were.
1992, I believe.
1992. So this is Nancy Kerrigan, the America's sweetheart skater for people who are of a certain age, which means they may have forgotten or they're not old enough to know. And Tonya Harding, a sort of rough and tumble, you know, kid from the other side of the tracks, and their rivalry during the 1992 Olympics, which, and their rivalry, of course, preceded the Olympics. So it's been nominated for a Golden Globe as a Best Picture in a comedy or musical.
Yeah, it is a comedy.
Is it?
Yeah, it's a mockumentary-style film, basically, and as the title suggests, it is a completely Tonya-centric view of the world. In fact, Nancy Kerrigan is barely in the movie. And it shows her life, and it's very sympathetic towards her, and it's sort of done in a kind of campy, you know, rib-nudging style. There were things I liked about it. It certainly is funny. Margot Robbie is...
She's so great.
She's kind of a revelation in it. She's so great. She's obviously... You know, we don't think of her as playing this kind of character, and she really shows she has the chops. And there is an amazing scene where she smokes a cigarette, and then she puts it out on the ground with the tip of her ice skate, which is one of the single great images. But my problem with the film, which I like to a certain extent, it was certainly entertaining, was that I felt that it was very patronizing towards its characters. And it's one of these films that sort of judges us for having judged Tonya Harding, but then you can see that it's actually judging the characters as well. It's sort of making fun of these lower class, tacky people. So it sort of wants to have its cake and eat it too. Like it wants to say, I j'accuse you of judging Tonya Harding. And then it sort of completely...
But let's laugh.
But then it revels in that. So that was my biggest issue with it. As far as just entertainment value, it's pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So another big biopic out there. By the way, This has nothing to do with biopics, although it almost feels like these characters are real. But at the Parkway, Jed, you're having a Bill and Ted Excellent Adventure retrospective screening with one of the actors who is in it. Right?
Yeah.
And those characters are so real to people that they may feel like that those are biopics too.
Yeah, Bill is played by a wonderful guy named Alex Winter, who's actually also a very important documentary filmmaker now. And we've had a couple of his films, one on Napster that we had at the festival a few years back. And he'll be here for the screening next week. So, we're opening a bunch of things that you should pay attention to. We always try to do stuff at the Parkway you can't see anywhere else, right?
That's right. Well, Bill and Ted, of course, used to be able to see all the time on VHS.
Exactly.
But now you can see it at the Parkway.
But now meet Bill.
You can actually meet Bill. Right. Let's get a few more biopic suggestions from folks on the phone. Phil in North Baltimore. Evidently, Phil, we've got our Olympic dating wrong. Is that right?
Yes, you did, just by 2 years. Nancy Kerrigan, I think, was in the 92 Olympics as well, but in 94, that was the controversial time of Tonya Harding. It was switched to, remember the Winter Olympics then were switched. It used to be the same year as the Summer Games, but then they decided to have the Winter Olympics like this year, the same year as another great sports event, the World Cup of Soccer, later in the year.
All right. Well, thank you.
You are right.
Thank you for that correction.
Catch.
Who
right.
needs Uncle Google right. when we got Phil? Thank you. So, how about your favorite biopic? What do you think?
Well, I like that great classic film in 1962, Lawrence of Arabia, starring Peter O'Toole and many other good actors, too. Alec Guinness, Omar Sharif, Anthony Quinn, and Anthony Quayle. It was a tremendous film. The cinematography was just tremendous, I like it very much.
Yep.
That's a really great one about one of history's most fascinating characters.
Yeah, fascinating.
We showed the 70mm print of it way back at the festival, and the guy who restored it, Bob Harris, when he introduced it, said he thinks this is the greatest film ever made because it uses every tool that a filmmaker can possibly use. And he said it's an expression of the art form at perfection.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think he's
it's
right.
It's in the conversation for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure. Lawrence of Arabia. Okay, thanks, Phil. Appreciate that call. Leslie in Baltimore. Welcome to Midday with Jed Dietz and Max Weiss.
Yes, I'm a Francophile and a fan of some of the old chestnuts about royalty, one being the Norma Scherer, Marie Antoinette.
Marie Antoinette. Sophia Coppola film.
From way back, Nice and Fluffy and Romantic. And then the coming to power of Louis the 14th, okay? I think it's by one of the grand Italians. And also The Madness of King George.
Oh, wow. So that's a good list.
Interesting takes on royalty.
Yes, very true. And a trinity of royal figures in movies. That's great. Well, thanks for that suggestion.
With royalty because that is a world, a cloistered world that we don't get access to. And one of the great things that films can do is give us access to these worlds we wouldn't otherwise have access to. And I think that's why films about royal families and TV shows like The Crown tend to fascinate us so much. Yep,
The Crown nominated as best TV series in a drama, along with Game of Thrones. That's, I guess, a kind of royalty thing, right? It's like made up royalty.
Kind of, exactly.
There's kings and queens in
there's
that.
Thrones, there, yeah.
Yeah, there's thrones.
And I would recommend to the royal phobe a film called The Death of Louis the 14th, which was a thing we had at the Parkway, and it takes place in those last few days of his life, completely made up, of course, because there's only a little bit of history available. But another fantastic performance and wonderful film.
All right. Well, thanks for that call. Rosemary in Baltimore, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling.
Oh, hi. Thanks for letting me speak. My favorite is Out of Africa.
Oh.
I'm a person who knows nothing about history unless I read it in a novel or go to see a film that's historically relevant. And just seeing Henrik Deason and her love story between Robert Redford and Meryl Streep in South Africa, in the time of marrying for money, getting syphilis, running her whole life, and then he getting on the plane and flying off, but then seeing the two of them still having the same issues that every couple has. I love you too much. You're in my face. Go away. Leave me alone. It's my favorite.
Sounds like my house, Rosemary. That's great. All right. Well, that's a terrific suggestion. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Moshak in Baltimore, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good, thanks. So what's your favorite biopic?
I don't remember the actors' names or when it came out. Maybe you guys could fill it in, but The King's Speech.
Yeah, Colin Firth. Yeah.
Colin Firth. Oh, that's a great movie. Yeah. We love that one.
Yeah, it's just at the end of it where they splice it in with the actual audio from the real King's speech. You can't tell the difference who's actually talking at some point, and it just blew my mind.
Yeah, he's great. And in fact, he's in Darkest Hour, not Colin Firth, but Ben Mendelsohn playing that same character.
Right, so that same character.
Same King.
And I really enjoyed The King's Speech too. Helena Bonham Carter, I think, plays the wife. And I think if you liked The King's Speech a lot, you're probably going to like Darkest Hour. They seem sort of adjacent in terms of filmmaking style and stuff. So,
We have to talk, particularly given, again, the Weinstein scandal, the scandal through Hollywood. And I'm, by the way, very taken and encouraged by the fact that some 300 actresses, film executives, powerful women in Hollywood have put together a group called Time's Up. And one of the things they're going to do is they're going to establish a legal defense fund. They're hoping to get $13 million, or maybe they already have $13 million in donations, and they're going to help janitors, nurses, farm workers, people in restaurants, people in factories, people in hotels, the people that you're not hearing about because they're not Meryl Streep and Dustin Hoffman. They're going to help them with their legal battles as they press charges. And one of the things, Jed, they want to do is try to get rid of the commonality of these non-disclosure agreements. So the Bill O'Reilly payments or the Weinstein payments that, you know, restrict someone from ever talking about what happened to them in the future.
Yeah, I think it's you're right. I mean, I think it's a very important step, and something big is happening that we're still at the beginning of. And I think you can, as we did, giggle a little bit about the black dresses and stuff, the Golden Globes. But I think there's a real sea change. And I think it's, and I think Time's Up, that Reese Witherspoon and others have been involved with and contributed funds to already, I think it will go beyond the entertainment world too. Mm-hmm. And it needs to.
And what's interesting is that in this particular year, where women are standing up and saying no more, Me Too, etc., some of the biggest films are very women-centric.
Right. Some of the highest-grossing films of the year. Wonder Woman, which I absolutely loved. The Last Jedi, the Star Wars film. Tons of women front and center. Rey and Laura Dern, and of course the late Carrie Fisher. And then the third highest-grossing film of the year was Beauty and the Beast, another female-fronted film. Yeah. So in front of the camera, we're seeing more women's stories not just being told, but really being embraced by audiences. And Hollywood is nothing if not a copycat industry. So,
And by the way, you've seen, speaking of Star Wars,
yes,
and I may be the last person, I've never seen a Star Wars movie. I've never seen one, not one. I haven't seen them on TV. I haven't seen them in the theaters and stuff. I live a cloistered life. I spend all my time at Luke's house doing our stamp collection. And but this is a, as you said, it's a female-centric movie. And that's actually had some backlash among the Star Wars, the 14-year-old boys who love Star Wars.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they're none too pleased that there are all these girls in it. Huh?
Oh, my God. There was even some sort of petition put out to strike this particular Star Wars from the official Star Wars record, partly because there are so many women and people of color front and center, but also because of what they do with the character of Luke. And I'm not going to spoil it too much, except for to say that he is a conflicted Jedi in this. He's not just this straightforward hero. It's actually great to see Mark Hamill playing this role in such an interesting way. I love The Last Jedi. I thought it was enormously entertaining, and they had a real director, this guy named Rian Johnson, direct the film, and the acting is great. It's amazing to see Laura Dern. But yeah, some of the fanboys, and I suppose some fangirls too, they didn't like all of the female heroes and the way it sort of deviated from the normal sort of heroic narrative.
Well, it's a franchise.
Get used to it.
Yeah, and it's a franchise that's unbelievably evolved. I mean, unbelievable, because the Hollywood instinct is to not evolve, to keep copying what you did successfully last time. And, okay, you take a little hit at the box office, but keep doing that. They've creatively kept this thing moving, and I can't think of anything else like it in movie history.
Right, The Force really Awakens, which was the previous one, which I actually liked a lot, but it was essentially a remake of the original film. Right. I mean, to your point. And I enjoyed it, but this is much more creative, interesting filmmaking.
I got a couple more suggestions for biopics. Melissa writes in from all the way upstairs here at WYPR. Raging Bull.
Great one.
And that's a great one. It's about the boxer Jake LaMotta. Frame by frame, one of the most incredible editing jobs of all time. Melissa, of course, a producer for On the Record here at WIPR. So that's a great suggestion.
That's on my list, too. Yep. That's a great one.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
And here's one from James, or Jim, who says, how about La Bamba? The story of Ritchie Valens. It's perhaps a bit melodramatic, but I think it captured that time in American pop music.
Yep, like that film a lot.
Lou Diamond Phillips.
Yeah, very charming. Great music, obviously.
Yeah, because these historical figures. I mean, I never saw the Julia Child movie with
Julia and Julia,
but I heard that was terrific, and I actually never saw the Margaret Thatcher one too. But Miss Streep is an incredible character actress.
Can I recommend one that people may not know as well, which is called Love and Mercy, which is about
Brian Wilson. I did see that. That's terrific. Yeah,
it shows him at two points in his life when he's a young man at his most creative, and then sort of beginning to have some mental illness, and then later played by John Cusack, the young man is played by Paul Dano. It's a really interesting biopic, and wasn't seen nearly as much as it should have been. Love and Mercy, I couldn't recommend it more highly.
All right, let's see if we can get a couple more suggestions from some callers. Linda in Parkville, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
What came over me, just letting it wash over me, was The Miracle Worker, which is a biography of Helen Keller, played by Patty Duke, and also her teacher, Anne Bancroft, played Annie Sullivan. And so you've got two big, great bios in one movie. And I'm old enough to kind of remember it as a youngster, and I just think it's a great work.
That's a great suggestion. Thanks for that call, Linda. Appreciate it. Let's see if we can sneak in another one. Mike in Hamden, welcome to Midday.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I was thinking of a male and a female on this. LaVian Rose, Marion Cotillard.
Yeah.
On the men's side, I'm for the compressed biopic again. All the President's Men is just one of the great films I've ever seen.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And La Vie en Rose, what's that? Who's that about?
Edith Piaf.
Oh, it was about Edith Piaf.
And Marion Cotillard was the star in that.
Right.
I'm trying to decide if All the President's Men officially qualifies as a
biopic. Well, it's Woodward and Bernstein, I guess.
Yeah, it's not really biographical. Or the guy in the parking lot. It's more of a procedural in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like The Post, which we may get a chance to talk about, or if not, you will next time.
Jason Robards got great kudos.
Right.
For,
yeah, it depicts real people, but I'm not sure if it qualifies as a biopic. But it certainly is biopic adjacent, and it's a brilliant film.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And great portrayals.
Yeah.
Speaking of films that a lot of people say are brilliant, is brilliant, it's at the Charles this weekend. It's been there for a little while. The Shape of Water.
Mm-hmm.
It's been nominated for a Golden Globe. I saw the trailer for this and looked to Linnell and said, no way, Jose. There's no way I'm going to go watch a monster love story all day. But that's just me. I'm limited.
It's Guillermo del Toro, who is a director I really like a lot. Yeah. I mean, Pan's Labyrinth. I loved Crimson Peak, a lot of his work. And the film is gorgeous, but I had some issues with it. For one, it takes place in Baltimore, but Baltimore is used so generically, it bugged me. Like, Baltimore could have been any place.
Right.
You know, it's like, if you're going to set your film in Baltimore, put some Baltimore things in it. So that bugged me. And yeah, they go there. So we've got our heroine, who is this mute woman who works at this sort of weapons laboratory in Baltimore. Sure. In I guess, the 50s. And they bring in this sea creature kind of monster.
Amphibian man.
And they go there, Tom.
They do. Yeah, that's what I heard.
It was a little icky. I couldn't really get past it. Count me
at my bowling league that night.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same thing, Jen.
I'm with you, Tom. I like this director a great deal. I think this was so pushed. Mike Sheehan, who's this great actor, plays the villain, and he has everything but a wax mustache that he twirls. Yeah. I mean, it's just...
But the rest of the world kind of likes
it. It looks great. It's a kind of cracked fairy tale. That's what Guillermo del Toro specializes in. if you can get past the ick factor, you might like it. I'm going to sort of tentatively recommend it, but it was definitely hashtag not for me.
Okay. All right. Well, that's all the time we have. Thank you very much. A couple of other folks called in. Lynn called to talk about The Sound of Music as a biopic. Appreciate that. And Rita emailed to suggest Lincoln.
Yep.
Is a great,
great
biopic.
One. Great one. Better than Darkest Hour.
Good stuff.
Just saying. Our biopic is better than theirs.
All right.
Just saying.
That's like your button is bigger than his. Max Weiss is the managing editor of Baltimore Magazine and a writer at Vulture.com. That's the entertainment website of New York Magazine. You can find her film reviews at the Max Space page on BaltimoreMagazine.net. And Jed Dietz is the founder and director of the Maryland Film Festival at the Parkway. They've got The Strange Ones now, which is a top pick by the one and only John Waters. Speaking of Baltimore. And our theater critic, Jay Wynn Russick, is up next with her weekly review. We're going to talk about First Date at the Spotlighters Theater here in Baltimore. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stick around.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.